more often than not define British Columbia and British Columbians. A new book, Salmon Wars, The Battle for the West Coast Fishery, looks at the natural resource, how it's been managed, and the so-called West Coast Salmon War of the 1990s. From Harbor Publishing, Salmon Wars gives us the point of view of someone in the eye of the storm. Its author, Dennis Brown, who joins me on the line today. Dennis Brown's family has fished commercially for three generations, and he's served as fishery policy advisor to the Premier of British Columbia until 2001. Mr. Brown, among other things, was also Secretary-Treasurer of the United Fishermen and Allied Workers Union. Salmon Wars retails for $25.95 and makes for an informative précis of the industry, and more importantly, it's readable. Please welcome to the commentary.ca, Dennis Brown. Good morning, Mr. Brown.
Hello, Joe.
Thanks for joining us. Growing up, as I said in the intro, that your family's fished for three generations, did you think growing up that you would always be, that you would become a fisherman when you grew up?
Well, I grew up in a fishing family, and fishing really shaped my entire life, and I didn't necessarily think I was going to be a fisherman, but as I explain in the book, I fell into the industry because at one time it was a great place to find employment and even to do what I did, which was go to university and whatnot on the basis of seasonal work, which sadly isn't there anymore. But I always thought that I would work my entire life in the industry once I got established working in the union and so on, and came as quite a shock to me personally, and I'm sure thousands of others, when the industry went through such fantastic upheaval over the last several years. And so many of us are pushed out, including myself, from an industry that we once had a lot of work in.
So why did you write this book? Was that the frustration that people like you can't work in the industry now, or couldn't?
In part, but I think there's two reasons, Joe. One was personal, which was the emotions I had about seeing my job and a lot of the people that I knew so well in the industry go through that upheaval. But secondly, I also thought it was important to put down on the public record some of the things I saw. Now, I want to make it clear that I'm not trying to fool anybody. I'm not purporting to be some, quote, objective historian sitting in an ivory tower and totally dispassionate about these events. I was clearly a player in the industry, and I have a very partisan viewpoint. I'm not ashamed of that. I'm actually proud of it. My goal in this book was to offer an alternative narrative, as it were, to what the government of Canada and the provincial government of the day have provided to the public. And that was primarily that fish are, salmon particularly, but fish in general are endangered, and that the chief problem is commercial overfishing. I share the concern about the status of our salmon stocks, but I do not believe that overfishing was the primary problem.
Was it government mismanagement, you say in the book?
Mismanagement for certain. But it's a whole host of issues, Joe, running the gamut from environmental problems like global warming through the rapid loss of fish habitat throughout the province, to the political problems which have not been solved in the industry, such as overfishing by the Americans and some of the turmoil in the industry about poaching and the abuses that are occurring within the industry. Yeah, all of that falls under the general topic of mismanagement of government, and I think the cause of the mismanagement has accelerated in the last 10 or 15 years when the whole ideology of downsizing government and privatizing resources seemed to take fashion in Canada. You can't manage a public resource like salmon if you don't have a public commitment to fund programs and government infrastructures to do the job. And that's a big part of my book. We don't have the research anymore. We don't have the enforcement people. We don't have the guardians of habitat. We don't have the programs for public groups to go back out and fix up the habitat. We're in a real crisis of governance here, as much as it ever was anything that commercial fishermen did.
One of the things I find interesting about having read your book is are the politicians that you talk about. We'll talk about that in a sec.
Yeah.
This idea of this crisis of governance, we see this throughout the world, though. We see this, you know, it's a sort of neoconservative,
yes,
sort of, it's in vogue, I guess, throughout the continent and elsewhere. How do you change that in British Columbia when it seems that everyone else, and everywhere else in the world, it seems to be
say that the solution lies in keeping the fish in the public's hands. In other words, keeping it a common property resource. And if I dare say, I think we're lucky in British Columbia that we have such high consciousness about the salmon, and it's maybe one of the areas where the public is most vigilant and willing to be politicized around the issue of privatization. I think that's good for us. Puts us ahead of the game as perhaps in other parts of the world. My experience as somebody who watched politicians up pretty close, in fact, right in the Premier's office, was that a lot of the politics of this issue was generated by PR spin doctoring that the end goal seemed to, at least in my mind, be how do we minimize political jeopardy for our minister? And it seems to me that what's happening now, which is really frightening, is a lot of people, particularly in the upper echelons of the DFO, figure that if the resource is privatized, the Minister of Fisheries will no longer have to take any flack for problems. And believe me, there's more than their share generated in both the West Coast and the East Coast fishery. And, of course, it's the old favorite issue of reducing costs. And in both cases, I think society comes out far worse off through the current process. I think that looked after and properly cared for, our salmon resource, it can not only be saved, but it can be actually increased. And we can create jobs and tax revenues and the like that would it would clearly pay for itself. So even though my book has an awful lot of negative stuff in it, there's still a great theme of hope runs through it. And as one person told me the other night at a book launch I was at, that the last chapter of this book is yet to be written. And that's the one where we get all this stuff back on track and invest in the resource again and bring it back to life.
In the 1990s, we heard a lot about salmon being an endangered species and that sort. You say that it was really commercial, over-commercial fishing that put this industry in crisis, right? Would you walk us back into those days in the 90s before the Mifflin Plan and what came about and this war of sorts that happened?
Well, there was two things happening in the late 80s and the early 90s. One was that markets for salmon, due to the corporate concentration and the lack of imagination at the corporate level in terms of the salmon product, was declining in economic value. Prices were falling, and that also was exacerbated by the rise of fish farms on a worldwide basis. And because the price of salmon appeared to be declining, the corporate sector began a campaign, somewhat quietly but very much more vocally later on, saying that if we reduce the size of the fleet by half, the remaining fishermen would catch twice as many fish and could therefore fish for half the price, and we'd all be better off economically. It was a lie. It never was true. But it was a convenient sort of pretext for rationalizing the number of participants in the industry. My book purports to, or does show, I think, that the half of the commercial sector that was removed was the half that was doing the least damage. It was the smaller owner-operators, people that lived in coastal communities who were content to perhaps make less each year, but saw fishing as a lifestyle.
Like your dad, right?
Like my father, like my brother today. The remaining capacity in the fleet, which has survived through all of this trauma, unfortunately, is the most efficient sector of the fleet. It's numerically smaller because there's fewer of them, fewer seine boats. It's larger boats that manage to survive. But they have tremendously greater catching capacity, and it's now concentrated in the hands of a couple of companies, primarily in Patterson's hands through the Canadian Fishing Company. And that hasn't brought us about any greater economic stability, and it certainly hasn't brought any greater social benefit from the fishery in coastal communities, where I think it really counts. The other thing that happened was, due to the things we talked about earlier, Joe, climate change, habitat problems, and a whole host of other compounding problems, we saw some stocks, but not all, only a small number of stocks, becoming endangered. These were stocks like steelhead, some of the stocks of coho on the Fraser River and the Thompson River, some stocks of coho on the Upper Skeena, and a few select stocks were being depressed. At the same time, ironically, some other stocks of salmon were reaching all-time high levels. And there was a problem in how do you segregate these weak stocks from the strong stocks. Traditionally, harvest rates had been designed so that you didn't hit the weak stocks too badly, but you took some of them, but that was the cost of doing business on the stronger stocks. But during the late 1990s, it seemed that the issue of salmon, endangered salmon, became so hot that it became a virtue for politicians to start shutting down fisheries, even when it was unnecessary. And for the last several years, we've missed millions and millions of dollars in potential revenue and lost all sorts of fisheries that could have been had on harvestable stocks. And the sad thing is, we didn't necessarily save the weaker stocks. Because in my view, the way to save those weaker stocks is not shutting down the strong stock fisheries, but by going in and doing very targeted enhancement and designing programs to be more selective in our harvests. That hasn't happened. And so my point being that not only have we lost the fish that we could have harvested, we're still in denial and putting off the job that we need to do in terms of saving those weaker stocks.
Well, where's that balance? How do we get to that balance, though? It seems that governments are unwilling to think of these things in those logical terms, that you can fish as well as, you know, make it a manageable resource.
Well, the first thing you got to do is you got to take it out of the form of 10-second sound bites and nice, easy, glib statements. David Anderson, who's much vilified in this book, was a master of making himself look like a great ecological savior. Yet his government, at the same time, was making vast and vicious cuts to the very people who were integral to saving salmon. Scientists, enforcement officers, habitat protection people. So there was a certain amount of hypocrisy which really motivated me to write this book, because I saw people like Anderson getting great political credit where it was not due, because had he really cared about the salmon, he wouldn't have allowed the kind of changes that occurred. I think the first thing you have to do is you have to maintain the Department of Fisheries. You've got to make it more responsive to not only the resource, but to people in society. But you've got to let the people that know the business do the business, and you can't politicize things like the Department of Fisheries the way Anderson and others did. And I think that if we had the kind of resources there and we had the personnel in place and allowed them to do what is right, we will see the benefits. But we saw consistently throughout, and I've reported a great deal of it in my book, where large mega projects like the Alcan completion project and other things took precedent over saving the salmon despite the politicians' pious rhetoric.
We're talking with Dennis Brown. His book is called Salmon Wars, The Battle for the West Coast Salmon Fishery, $25.95 Canadian from Harbor Publishing. What about, you talked about David Anderson and the federal Liberals. What about the provincial government? You worked with an NDP government. What was their record like? And compare that to the record now of the Liberal government under Campbell.
Traditionally, the provincial government has ignored the fishery, I'll be blunt. And for years, other resource industries, such as the forest industry, mining, development, real estate development, et cetera, took precedent over the fishery in the provincial eyes. And the federal government, as it went through its vast downsizing in the last several years, became less and less of a counterbalancing force to those different competing interest groups. For a very short period of time, I believe that Glenn Clark, for perhaps some of the same reasons that I criticized David Anderson, but so be it, for political gain, I don't know how you want to describe it, took an interest in the fishery. And I think that for a short while, the spotlight was thrown on a very important theme in my book, which is the tension between Ottawa and Victoria, British Columbia and the rest of Canada, in terms of where British Columbia sits in Confederation. I do not believe that Glenn Clark succeeded. But I do believe that during that brief period that's described in my book, he did throw the spotlight on a lot of big problems. As it turned out, in the end, the provincial government, both the NDP provincial government and certainly more laterally the Liberal provincial government, did not have the kind of clout or the resources to back up its claim to do a better job of managing the resource. I don't think that we did as good a job as I would have liked to have seen during that NDP era, but at least there were things like the Fisheries Renewal Corporation that was set up that did a lot of good work in restoring salmon habitat. That was chopped by Campbell's government. Since the Campbell government came to power, I put it, state this in the book, more than 2,700 workers in the resources ministry or the former environment ministry have been chopped. So things have gone from bad to worse. I wish, however, that the province would take fisheries more seriously. And I'll just add one other little rejoinder on that, Joe, and that is I'm afraid that provincial governments, both the NDP and certainly the Liberals now, have been far too preoccupied with promoting fish farms and the rearing of artificial stocks of fish than they have been or should be in protecting and promoting wild salmon.
So I guess this is one thing that I can't get my mind around is if the federal Liberals, the NDP and the Liberals provincially haven't done a good job at it, at managing the resource, how do you expect government agencies like the DFO or Environment Canada to how do you expect them to do a good job in the future?
It's a good question. It's a tricky...
I mean, why trust them if they've been unsuccessful heretofore?
Yeah, I know what you mean by that. I guess the only thing I can say to that is better that than the current path we're on, which is to put the entire resource in the hands of quota holders or privatizing it in the hands of corporations, then misleading the public into thinking that that will be a reduction of cost to the taxpayers and somehow or other a more economic, market-driven approach to the management of the fisheries will magically ensue. I think that the best thing that can be done is that people gain greater consciousness in coastal communities, people who have a stake in the industry, and the public at large, that we democratize this debate, that we insist that the resource not be privatized, because once it's gone, once it's in private hands, we'll have even less say over what happens in future. And we need to go back and look at some of the history. In my book, I point out that at the peak of its success, the Salmon Enhancement Program, which was brought in by the Trudeau Liberal government, was returning to the economy about $1.30 for every dollar spent on enhancement. That's a damn good investment. It's not a cost to government. It's a money generator. It's a revenue generator. So instead of coming along saying, well, we're going to cut all these programs, we should be restoring them with the goal to be, incidentally, not just to restore the fish because we want to protect fish for the, the icon of economic, or pardon me, environmental health, but for the express purpose that we want to put people to work, not only in the harvesting of the fish that will come back, but also in the jobs around cleaning up damaged habitat. There's lots of it out there, Joe, and there could be a lot of people that are currently unemployed in coastal communities put to work on that kind of work. And I think it would be something that would prime the pump. Unfortunately, that kind of approach to politics has fallen out of favor in the last 20 or 30 years, but I think it's been proven in the past, if you look at history from the New Deal on, that those kind of government programs, if done right and done responsibly, can be greatly successful.
What's the reaction been to your book so far from observers, from politicians?
Well, it's been delightful for me because, first of all, I didn't know if anybody would be interested. To see it hit the bestsellers list last week was just a real shock and a surprise to me, a pleasant surprise. The reaction I'm getting from most people is that they're finding the book easier to read than they thought, which is partially due to the good editors that I had who encouraged me not to write the book as a sort of a dry sort of litany of statistics and detail, but to try and tell a story. Now, I'm not a professional writer. I did my best, and I learned on the job that telling the story through the eyes of the fishermen I know as sincerely as I could would make for a more entertaining read than just spewing out a lot of opinions and data. So the best thing that I'm getting back in the preliminary feedback is that people have actually enjoyed it, and that's people who have no knowledge about the fishery or any great stake in it. But they were curious, they wanted to know what happened, and when they've read it, they've said, well, we may not agree with everything you say, but we certainly feel we have a better insight onto what's going on. So that's made me feel really pleased.
I certainly thought, well, I have no interest in fishing, but the political stuff, I thought it was just a great story, a great narrative that you tell. So thanks for joining us today, Dennis.
Thank you, Joe.
And continued good luck with this book.
Thank you very much.
It's a great history of the industry and the politics surrounding it all, and I do suggest you pick it up. The book is called Salmon Wars, The Battle for the West Coast Salmon Fishery. $25.95 Canadian from Harper Publishing, the author Dennis Brown, here on the commentary.ca. I'm